you may have seen, is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Find out more at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.
Actors, right? The road to fame and celebrity. All right, I get it. You've had an incredible life.
Aren't you sick of hearing about them?
Me too.
The only problem is, I'm one of them. Except I'm not famous.
Oh, you've probably seen me. A bunch of times.
I'm the guy with the information about the hero's dad. I'm the doctor that can't figure out what's wrong with one of the main characters. I'm the guy they just punched in the face during the interrogation.
My name's Brian LaFontaine, and I'm a professional actor.
Oh, and it's not just me. There's a ton of us.
We're the ones you don't hear about.
Yeah, we're the names that scroll by at lightning speed during the end credits. But there's way more of us than there are of them. We're important too, dammit. Because without us, they can't tell the rest of the story. So this is for all the movie and TV prostitutes, homeless people, drug dealers, cab drivers, cops numbers 2, 3, and sometimes 4, the pilots, the waitresses, and girl at party.
This is You May Have Seen.
Today I'm talking with Jason Laughlin. I've known Jason since he was a teenager.
You know when you know someone as a kid, and that's the only way you can picture them?
Yeah, it was one of those moments. This guy's pretty incredible, and I had a great time having him fill me in on his adventures over the past 20 years. We talk about being too smart for Busy Phillips, chewing gum when you're not supposed to, and carrying on a family legacy in show business. Here's Jason.
I'll just go back to where it was.
All right. Yeah, because that's where the actual mic is
the
right in there.
Here.
Yeah, the element's right in there.
So let's do this.
Yeah, we'll do this. Thanks for working with me. I appreciate that. So I'm like, all right, I'm not sure if it's just I need to clean the battery cables and get rid of the corrosion, and the battery's still good and I can jump it. So I go through all that shit. It takes the jump, and so it's fine for the rest of the day on Saturday. Sunday, I go out to start it, dead again. So I'm like, fuck. So yesterday morning, I go to replace the battery. Shouldn't be a big deal. See, this is when your man card is being tested. Like anything automotive, it's like, if I can't do this, then I have failed.
You have to turn your card in. You can get it back in 6 months.
That's right.
You got to take a test and get through some hoops.
Could not get the negative cable off of the battery. It had actually fused to the battery.
Oh, was it corrosion?
Well, I don't know what had happened. If it had just melted into it, it melted the plastic or whatever.
That's on probably, the actual, probably corrosion, a leak somewhere.
I mean, even, you know, so I called out AAA. That's when I was talking to you going, we got to reschedule. And even they came out and they're like, we can't get this off either. So, I mean, it's a little bit of validation because even the dude from AAA was like, yeah, we can't get it off either. But still, it sucked. It was more frustrating than anything.
What is car trouble, period? When your car doesn't work, it's the one thing that you're like, this is the thing that has to work. If this doesn't work, I can't do anything else in my day.
No.
So when problems happen with cars, it's like, oh, fuck.
And
I'm just now getting back into the understanding of that because I didn't have a car for 12 years.
Well, no, right. Living in New York, I sold my car before I went. And there was something very liberating about getting there and just going like, it's up to somebody else to get me from here to there now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Taking that whatever $1,000 you have, put it in the bank account and go, all
right,
I got some spending money for New York City, guys.
Watch out. Car insurance gone, not paying for gas. Sure, you got to pay for the subway and taxis, but so much more fun.
I mean, there's so much more fun. Paying for the subway, like when I 12 years, I think it started when I got there, it was like 81 or 76 for a month-long pass.
Oh, okay.
And then when I left, it was 130.
Are you serious?
And the people got so pissed. And I'm like, guys, it's not that much. It's really not that much compared
to
$400 you would pay a month for a shitty car with insurance that covers the whole car.
Right.
So, come on. Also, you don't have to worry about drinking and driving.
Exactly.
And there's taxes.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's all about perspective.
I can see. But everything else in New York is so expensive. I'm sure that they were so like, this is the one thing that we had.
Yeah, right.
So, Jason Laughlin, where may we have seen you?
Oh, so you can see me in a bar somewhere in Charlotte, probably Oh, you mean on the screen?
Wherever, man.
Tube.
Wherever people might recognize you.
I was in a Dawson's Creek. Thank you very much.
Actually,
that shoot got pushed because of 9/11.
Really?
Nobody could fly. And they were all out in LA because it was one of the first couple episodes back for that season.
So you were on the creek, like, right at the beginning.
No, it wasn't the beginning. I think it was, like, season 5. It was 2001.
You were on it before me, then.
It was 2001.
Yeah. I wasn't on it until...
It was a Halloween episode.
After I got married.
Well, I tell
Yes, you
Katie
are the
Holmes and Busy Phillips to shut the fuck up. because we're in a library, and I had three lines. And it was a lot of fun.
Well, yes, I have it right here. You were goateed student.
That's correct. Goateed. Not even a name. Student. That's all right.
Did you have a goatee? Did you have a goatee?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Was that basically like the whole basis for getting the job? Does he have a goatee? He's hired.
I think it was goateed student before I got there. So like before I even auditioned, I think it was goateed student. So like I shaved what little beard I had, because at that point I couldn't even grow a beard. It was patchy.
Like, how old are you at that point?
20.
Were you really? Well, I guess you were. I mean, you know.
I would have been 2001, okay. September.
Because it's hard for me. I know there's really not a huge age difference between us, but I mean, the fact that I've known you since you were in high school.
A wee lad.
There are still times I look at you and I'm like, wasn't he just a kid? Like, I know he was like this when I met him? But
well,
you weren't.
You don't see somebody for a while.
I know.
You remember what they were, and then you see them and you go, wait, well, who the fuck is this person who is
right.
now in front of me?
All
you're not
grown
the person
up,
I remember.
You are not.
Funny story from that Dawson's Creek shoot. We go outside to have a smoke break, and I smoked back then. Yeah.
Mm.
27 years.
Yes, you did.
Not a good thing.
Wait, you smoked for 27 years?
Yes.
Holy Jesus.
13. It's North Carolina.
Wow,
expect.
You ruffian.
Oh, yeah. I'm paying for it. But we go outside for a smoke break. It's me, some other dude that was one of the guest stars.
Yeah.
And then Busy Phillips going outside, and we're just chatting.
Yep.
Normal just talk. And she goes, oh, I think I left my drink out here last time. And I was like, is it that Diet Coke sitting right there? She goes, yeah, it is. Huh, thank you. Wait, oh, bugs are going to have gotten into it. And I went, well, it's diet. There's not going to be any sugar, so the bugs aren't going to be attractive. She turns to me, and I shit you not, dead face, goes, oh, you're a thinker. And I went, yeah. Cool, I'm going to go back inside. And I walked away. I was like, I don't know how to... Any other way to get out of this one, just leaving.
You know, Jason, nobody wants you to teach them shit. No one wants to learn about the ins and outs of Coke and Diet Coke.
You'd
and...
think at 40 I'd know that.
But
still
but
happens.
At 22 you didn't. But oh, yeah, it still happens. Still happens now.
I'm like, guys, this is just basic logic.
Oh, my God. That is fantastic. So that was your first on-camera. But you're a lifelong actor, pretty much.
Yeah.
Right?
And that wasn't my first audition, because that was like my... For the Fincannons, I drove out to one a couple times. I went in for Band of Brothers.
Oh, yeah.
I went in in Atlanta for Remember the Titans.
Yes.
And it was so funny. What was her name? Shay, I think was her name.
Yeah, Shay Griffith.
She goes, you're good, but you're just too short. And I went, cool, I'm 5'11", but that's fine.
Right.
Way to make me feel good, Shay. Right. My dad said really nice things about you, but not anymore. So I'm going to take my ball and go home.
Can't wait. Really looking forward to how this business is going to...
Because she cast Dad, and...
She did.
Your audience may not know this. I'm the son of Terry Laughlin, who has done...
Yes.
...tons and tons of things.
Yes. I was going to bring up your dad at some point. I appreciate you bringing him up.
Oh,
yeah,
you did.
Yeah, your dad was an actor, a very good friend of mine, who I just loved to death, and he was such a good guy, and he was very good to me along the way in a lot of ways.
He was just a good dude.
He was a good dude.
I mean, you know, everybody's got their issues, but like he affected a lot of people's lives for the better. I mean, for classes and just getting drinks and making them laugh. And, you know, he brightened every room.
And he was a damn fine actor.
He was very good.
Yeah.
Although I can't watch him.
I bet.
Well, because I see the machinations in his brain.
Okay.
I am half him.
You are half him.
And my brain is almost all him, except for the... You know, right-wing stuff. But, you know, there's a great documentary called The Brainwashing of My Father, and it talks about how Fox News has sort of step-by-step with their onslaught of other media outlets and left-wing ideals has sort of just taken that amygdala and just blown it the fuck up, and people are just afraid, and that's why they run towards the right side of... Like anti-immigration, all that stuff.
Right.
It's a wonderful documentary, and they detail how they got him out of that vicious loop.
Wow.
It's like emails and those big email chains that people send out, the forwards and all that stuff.
Listening to Rush Limbaugh,
watching Fox News, and you're just sort of getting this encasement of fear and right-wing politics. And he's like, we used to listen, because I would go with him to Wilmington for auditions back when I was a teenager, and we would listen to Rush Limbaugh on the
drive. That's a long 4 hours.
And I'd be like, I don't, look, what, why is he so angry? I really agree with the things that he's saying either, but why is he so angry? Like, I don't think the world is that bad. Certainly not Skokie, Illinois, or wherever the fuck he's talking about. What is Dad? Why did you listen to this?
Shh,
he's real smart.
Yeah.
But he was a brilliant teacher. He could bring, he could elicit what people were hiding inside themselves on screen out of them.
Yep.
To say, you're doing this. Mm-hmm. What you need to do is this.
Yep.
And within seconds, you see the transformation on people's faces on screen. So he did a wonderful job.
So was he the influence for you? Because had he been doing it since you were born? I mean, is that
yes.
all you remember him
we
doing?
We moved to Charlotte when I was two, and he started a theater company with Ron. Ron Cook.
Judy's husband. Yes.
I don't entirely know about how, or the details of how that started. He was doing theater with Frank in Tennessee, which is how he and my mom met.
Okay.
And then they quickly got pregnant and married, and then moved to California, and then moved to Oregon, which is where I was born. And then we moved back to Tennessee when I was like 6 months.
Really?
And Charlotte when I was two.
I had no idea.
Just doing theater. They started a company. It was a dinner theater. Golden Circle.
Was that him?
One of my earliest memories or essences that I get is that I would, at 4 or 5 years old, I'm watching rehearsals in our basement.
Wow. Because
in our Charlotte home, we lucked out and had this, you know, two floors. Mm-hmm. And on the bottom floor, there was one entire section of the house that yep. was a playroom. So there was a pool table there, which came with the house. You know, like we couldn't afford a pool table. So they would rehearse in the basement. And I would just sit there and watch them and like watching these people transform. And the older I got, the more I realized that it's not them. But there was a time when I was seeing Dad at a show at North Carolina Stage. It was Private Lives, and he got hit over the head with a record. And I was like, why are you hurting my dad? Don't do that to my dad. And then I was like, oh, it's not real.
Right.
And then I actually did Private Lives at Riverside Theater a couple of years back.
Same role?
Same role, Elliot. But Dad had directed the show the last time they did it, like 8 years before.
Mm-hmm.
So that was I saw pictures from that production on the wall.
Oh, man.
And that was sort of amazing because Dad was still alive at that point. He came to see me in Private Lives.
Hmm.
I still lived about an hour and a half away from wherever that is. Riverside is in Vera Beach.
Oh, okay.
It's great. It's a great company to work for.
Right.
They take care of their people. And Alan Cornell is the guy who runs it. And he's got a great mind and just a cool dude.
See, I never knew how to get into the handful of good regional theaters that are in North Carolina. I mean, I got lucky with Flat Rock because of your dad.
Yeah.
When we did Lost in Yonkers, which was the co-production with Charlotte Rep that year. That's how, I mean, I knew about Flat Rock and it was like, oh, everybody wants to go there and work there over the summer. And I just got really, really fortunate that was the, like, if it had been any other show, it probably would not have happened. That was just, you know, me and Neil Simon, we just got along really, really well. You know, I was...
How many Neils did you do? Like laughter?
I did. Well, I mean, from the very beginning, I did Brighton Beach, Broadway Bound. I did Lost in Yonkers. I did Laughter on the 23rd Floor. I did Barefoot in the Park.
Wow.
Those are the ones that I've done so far.
That's a good section of his work.
Well, you know, and it also helps that you're 24 and you look like you're 15.
That's true.
That had a lot to do with it.
I remember when I first saw you do Yonkers and then knew how old you were and went, Jesus Christ, that guy's good. it was a revelation. You know, there were mile markers, like when I was 9 seeing that play in North Carolina Stage, and then when I was 14, I think, or mm-hmm. 13, I saw my brother do Tom in Glass Menagerie. And I went, holy fuck, mm-hmm. I want to be able to do what he just did. Because, like, it's your family, you know them, but then you don't know them.
Yep.
And that sort of solidified it for me. Because mm-hmm. I was a sports dude. Still am. I love sports. But I'm like, I probably could have definitely gone to college for baseball or tennis.
Really? I was going to ask if you played tennis like you did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I started playing tennis when I had a racket in my hand by the time I was two. Right. And I love tennis. It's my favorite game to play. Unless... Mm-hmm. I can play football because there's nothing like throwing like a 35-yard pass.
I was gonna say, were you a quarterback?
Perfect. Yeah, but I was the backup quarterback when I played. And then I almost broke my neck. My mom said, not playing any more football.
Get into the theater.
Yeah. But then I found pot and girls. And
in the same place?
And theater. Well, in the same theater. Place. Because when you're in theater, half of your competition is gay.
so you don't have to worry about it.
No.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So it was just an easier transition for me.
So yeah, your brother is a wonderful actor.
Wonderful.
Love Scott.
Trying to get him back on stage.
I think that's a great idea. Yeah. I certainly miss seeing him. I always enjoyed working with him, and he's, of course, just a great guy. Your sister-in-law. Your sister did it a little bit, on and off. Your dad. Now, your mom, no.
Yes.
She was.
Oh, yeah. That's how they met. She was in a play that he directed.
Oh, really?
In Morristown, Tennessee.
See, again, that I did not know.
Oh, yeah. It's just an onion, just peeling back those layers.
Oh, my God. So you had no shot. You had no shot at being an accountant or a plumber.
Well, mom was the realist. Yeah. So, like, dad was off trying to make it big on screen and
right.
on stage, and mom got a real job.
Yeah.
She okay. held down the fort for most of my childhood. Like, she, you know, she didn't go to college.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what she did before, but when we moved to Charlotte, she became like a secretary for some VP at Bojangles. And I think within three years, she was a VP herself.
Wow.
Yeah. Because she was smart. She was quick as a whip. Whenever we had negotiations, cars, houses, anything, she would be the one to do it.
Really?
Because dad would just get mad and mom would be like, cool, here's what we're going to do. Here's what you're going to give me. And then we're going to part as friends. And they would do it because she was fucking charming too. I had no chance of not at least being somewhat likable.
Right.
Because my parents were extremely charming people.
They were very charming.
Very people. Charming.
People. Yes, yes, yes.
And we say were because they're both dead, which is fine.
Yes. They are.
They did a good job with their three kids.
They are greatly missed.
But yeah, so I mean, she had that job for years. Then she became a salesman for ad airtime on radio, mm-hmm. 104.7. I can't remember the name.
Oh,
of
yeah,
it
yeah, was. Yeah. Star 104.7.
I think so,
right at the time. That.
And I just said, I don't care if I don't make any money. I want to tell stories.
And there was really no concern from your parents, obviously, about
Dad was pissed.
About you wanting to pursue it?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
He was like, you could be a doctor, you could play sports, and then retire at 35 and then do it. Why are you choosing to do this? He didn't even think I was good until I was in college. He came and saw me in a play. It was Beyond the Horizon, which is Eugene O'Neill mm-hmm. in a black box. And after he came to see it, motherfucker. After he came to see it, he was like, now I think you can do it. And I went, thanks, Dad.
Wow.
It's taken you this long. Like, wow. I had done 15, 16 plays at this point.
Yeah.
Leads in most of them.
Yes.
Because it's a small pond, you know, mm-hmm. and I have some, for whatever reason, I have some raw talent. That
we were on stage together. We were in a play together.
Yeah.
When you were still in high school.
That's correct. That was, the Paper Chase?
That was the Paper Chase.
Yeah. With Lon.
With Lon. That's right. You were, your senior, your senior year at the Children's Theater. That was your last.
Was that the last one?
Yeah, that was the last one, I think. Because I think there was that period where it's like you were a senior in high school. You guys were all teenagers in high school.
And hopes then, and dreams.
Right.
Sitting
but
in
then,
front of us.
But then, like, I never saw you for years. Like, so I don't know. Where did you end up going to college? Where did
UNC
you?
UNC Charlotte. Well, I took a year
did
off.
Did you really?
I took a year. Not many people know this. I guess I'll have no problem telling it. But I had a 1360 on the SAT back when it was 1600.
Yeah.
And I had a 1.9 weighted GPA.
Holy Jesus.
Yeah. I didn't go to school a lot. I did a lot of drugs. Lots of drugs. And so after barely graduating high school, because I had to take an extra class that I didn't know I had to take, so I had missed the first 2 months of that class. And I went in and I was like, hey, man, I'm sorry. I can't get up in the morning. My dad is out of town a lot. My mom leaves at 6 a.m. So I set my alarm, but I don't get up. And I am so sorry for him, which is partly true. And he looked at me and he goes, don't miss any more classes. You better ace everything. And I went, yes, sir. Of course I did. Aced everything because I was a smart kid. I just didn't fucking care. And I passed. I got a D.
That's amazing.
And I'm cleaning out stuff. I'm walking with some friends and I see him and I said, oh, fuck, what's his name? He had a brother who taught Spanish who died, like a twin brother. I can't remember. But anyway, saw him walking across the quad.
Yeah.
I said, hey, man, thanks for passing me. And he's like, you aced everything. You failed. But I passed you because you were honest.
Look at that.
Bing! Big fucking moment in life to go.
Look
cool.
At that.
I got helped. Because I was honest. Maybe just be honest, period.
Maybe.
You'll need less help to begin with. Not that I was dishonest. Right. And like I
really want to sleep with your sister.
Yeah.
Shit. I'm just being honest.
Honesty in moderation. Honesty in moderation.
So, okay. So you went to UNC Charlotte. And then did you go to grad school after that?
Oh, no.
No,
I
you didn't.
School.
Okay.
Well, again, it was, I thought I was going to go to UNC Charlotte and do a one-off and try and transfer somebody somewhere else, like NYU or another like large school program.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, like in that pool, I was a more talented person.
Right.
Like I was, I was doing leads by, like, you're not allowed to be in the first semester,
but the second semester,
I'm already doing a lead in the show.
Right.
And second year I was a lead twice. And that, I mean, I did seven or eight shows at UNC Charlotte as a lead.
All right.
And so I did a lot of Shakespeare out of college. I just started working.
Yeah.
I went to LA for 6 months because a buddy of mine who was a lovely human being, who is a writer, I directed a couple of his pieces in college, and he was like, I'm out in grad school at USC. Come out to California. There's theater here. People love it. It's not true.
Okay.
I did direct one of his things.
Yeah.
But nobody gives a fuck about theater in LA. Nobody cares because they're waiting to get that $40,000 commercial.
Right.
Like, we had a guy drop out of a show that I was in because he was like, that's more important than this. And I go, cool, I don't agree with that. I can't be in LA.
Yeah.
And then mom got sick, so I came back.
Right.
And then, like, she had a terminal illness. She was diagnosed with stage 4 glioblastoma in her left or right side of the back of her brain. And, you know, they gave her 3 to 6 months. She lived for 13. She's a damn trooper. But so that brought me back. Worked at High Point. Went down to Georgia to audition and got cast in a tour for Georgia Shakespeare.
That I
had to quit that because mom went into hospice and they were like, it's time. So bounced between Charlotte, High Point, and what's that place called? Atlanta. Doing shows.
Yeah. Really quick. For anyone who doesn't know, I am talking to Jason Laughlin, where aside from being goateed student on Dawson's Creek, Jason, you also appeared in an episode of that ABC series Forever.
Mm-hmm.
You were in the movie The Shunning.
Oh, that one. I had a beard, an Amish beard. Man, I was sexy. With my little Amish family.
It's a sexy look.
It's
a very sexy look.
You know, it's delectable. You know, it's delectable.
According to you, you appeared in the act.
Is it not on there?
It's not on there. Oh, don't get ahead of me. And apparently you're going to be in some Lifetime movie either with Patsy Cline or as Patsy Cline coming up
soon. As Patsy Cline.
My
voice
Patsy
is Cline. A little different. They've probably done some modulation on it.
But no, I did finally find it called Patsy and Loretta. Yeah, man, you have to update your presence like from the acting perspective. Like IMDb, no photo of you. No picture. No picture.
I have to pay for that.
I don't think so. I think that there's a free option for you to put at least a photo on there. I could be wrong, but I think you should look into it.
I should look into it.
Seeing as you're still doing this professionally or attempting to do it professionally. They don't have you listed for the act. Like, did you see yourself in the act?
Yeah.
What did you do?
I'm a deputy.
Okay.
I pick up, or I take the arm. I handcuff, what is her name?
Patricia Arquette. Good.
I handcuff her.
Yeah.
And then take her to her family, at which point she says, can I please talk to them? And I go, sure. And she looks at me and goes, can I take the handcuffs? And I go, fuck no. Talk to your goddamn family. Although a little bit more nice. Nicer.
That's too bad. That's unfortunate.
And but I think I'm like barely visually apparent.
But that's the whole point.
Yeah,
that's the whole purpose of us being here having this conversation.
Like, I watched it and I went, that's what I figured. I was like, there's no need to keep me. The first shot we did, I was a jackass. And I was like,
why?
I'm just going to chew some gum. Nope, bad idea, because your mic's hot.
Oh, right.
So there's like three people come up to me and go, can you not chew gum? And like the last person to do it was the fucking director, this lovely French woman whose name escapes me. It's probably on there somewhere. Goes, you chewing gum? And I went, no, we're good. I've got it. And I was like, fuck, I'm that guy.
Is this the first time or last time we discussed this? I don't know what accent that was. And then what do you do in this Patsy and Loretto upcoming?
So it's thing. A couple of scenes. It's very brief, but she's coming in. Loretta is coming in to find new management representation. And this particular scene, she's having trouble with, like, her husband being sort of controlling. And
right.
So me and my brother are talking to them about doing that. And then we eventually sign them, which I don't think is on screen. But it's a great shoot. It was a great shoot. The director and writer and producers were all lovely. She had done...
actress.
No, the producer.
Oh, okay.
Director, writer. She wrote something else.
Callie Corey?
I think that's Patsy and Loretta.
Patsy,
I think
she's
so.
She wrote
Platinum Blonde.
Yeah, she wrote Thelma and Louise.
Yes, that's the one.
Yeah, she directed.
She was awesome.
She directed me on Nashville. She was awesome. She was awesome. She was great. I had a great time working with her.
But Jesse Mueller, who plays Loretta, is somebody who I know from New York.
From New York.
Because she...
She played...
Her man friend.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, she played Carol King in Beautiful. She was in Waitress. She won the Tony for that. Super talented. The voice is amazing.
So, okay. You brought us there. You made it to Broadway, Jason. You became a Broadway baby. That happened.
Why, Benjamin Buttoned?
No.
What is this?
I didn't make it to
The Great White Way.
Yes. So, I mean, your pursuits in this industry ended up being more in the direction of theater as opposed to film and television. You've got this, you know, all-American, blonde hair, blue-eyed... A little too short to be too tall.
That's all American, right.
Yeah, not quite 5'11". Tall enough.
Somebody
That's
once
right.
told me, say you're 6 foot, and I said, I'm not 6 foot, so I'm not going to say I'm 6 foot.
Hey, just being honest.
Yeah.
Just being honest. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
My physical education professor told me, be honest.
Yeah, I mean, did you always plan on pursuing theater more than film and television? Or were you just like, let's see whatever happens?
It's not that I would love to have been more successful I would love to be more successful in TV and film. Mm-hmm. It's just, I prefer theater. I prefer live. I prefer being in front of somebody and there's no parachute. There's no brakes. Nope. You're doing it. Mm-hmm. Whatever happens on that stage is happening.
Yeah.
It's like falling gracefully. It's just like, I still get scared.
Yeah.
I still have fear.
Right.
And the mantra that I have, like, I've done a show 500 times. I still go, can I do this? And I go, well, you're going out there. So you better fucking engage. You take the stick.
Yeah.
Fly the plane.
Yep.
Don't worry about it. You know what you got to do.
Yep.
And it has so far worked.
So tell me about that whole journey, that whole adventure.
So I went to New York.
You did. At which point did you go to New York?
I went to New York in 2007, January of 2007.
So you'd have been...
First morning that I woke up, and I was 26, 27.
27? Okay.
My magic year, my Kurt Cobain.
Okay.
Jimi Hendrix.
Right. You weren't worried about that, though, were you?
No, not at all. Okay, no. I don't give a fuck. You don't think about that shit. You don't have blinders on, but you have trajectory. Visual trajectory of where you want to go. And I didn't do it right. I peeked out. I had a couple opportunities that, like, I got deterred. Like, I went in to a EPA, which, for those of you who don't know, is an equity principal audition, which is something that happens all over the country for any theater that is affiliated with Equity has to hold open auditions so that any Equity member can come and audition.
Right.
Aside from that, you do agent submissions, and that's how most jobs get done.
Right.
But occasionally at EPAs, they find people who... They're like, oh, you're talented. You're going to come in to our rounds of auditions. So I got called back from an EPA for The Public, Daniel Sullivan, In the Park. I think it was Midsummer Night's Dream, which is a show that I had done in college.
Right.
But like I had some acumen with Shakespeare. Like, I loved it. So I put a lot of energy into doing it. So getting a call back for that director at that theater in New York from an EPA is pretty fucking unheard of.
How long had you been there before that came up?
6 months.
Okay, so so pretty quick.
Pretty early.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it was a month or two.
Wow.
Yeah, because it would have been February or early March, late February, early March. I think it was late February. And then, you know, I got cast in a show that was up the river, up on Croton Harmon, called Retreat from Moscow.
Okay.
Which I also got from an EPA, but you know, paid like $250 a week. So like, but I went up with the Nest Egg, so I could take my time.
Right. You're starting to lay the groundwork. You're starting to establish yourself. People are getting to know you.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Right. But I didn't really have an agent. I didn't get my agent until March, and he would only send me in for Shakespeare.
That tends to be the curse in New York City. And I don't know if it's the same in LA, but it's like when I was there, because I had a much more substantial film and television resume, I could not get in for any, you know, decent theater auditions at all. They were like, oh no, he's...
Well, most of it is...
And I've heard the opposite is true as well.
Well, he was an older agent.
Okay.
And he operated under the assumption that you can't do anything else. Like, if this is what's on your resume, that's what you do.
Right.
And that's an old mentality that's quickly dying off.
Well, that's
like the next agent I had, we'll talk about that later, but my first agent, I had several, because I had pretty big auditions and didn't get anything. It's just hard in New York. Like, everybody who's anybody who wants to do theater goes to New York, as opposed to people who want to do film and TV go to LA. It's changing now because there's as much shot in New York or out of New York as there is in LA, and everything's done online now anyway.
Right.
But I would walk into his office and like, I really appreciate you giving me these Shakespeare auditions, but there, I can do other stuff. Like I can do TV and film. I can do straight plays, comedies. I can do everything.
Right.
Just don't send me in for musicals. And he was like, cool. Next audition, Shakespeare. Fuck off, man. And so I let that defeat me. And I sort of got bogged down after 2 years of that. Like I had my day job wasn't waiting tables. My day job was carpentry because I'm handy with my hands. And a buddy of mine was working at several theaters around town. Mm-hmm. As a carpenter, I was like, I can get you on these lists. And so I started working at St. Anne's Warehouse. It's Lucille Ortel, which...
All
these places. And then after, you know, 2 years of sort of hitting my head against the wall and not really knowing how to get out, I was coming back to Charlotte, or not to Charlotte, to High Point to do...
Shakespeare again?
No. Christmas Carol.
But we're still with the Shakespeare Festival.
With the Shakespeare Festival. Which is now defunct. And then I was just tired, and it was winter, and I was like, what am I going to do when I get back? And then I got an email from somebody saying, hey, we need somebody to be our master carpenter for 3 months. We'll pay you $3,000 a month.
Great.
Can you do it? And I went, I'm tired of eating ramen noodles.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
More with Jason in just a minute. You're listening to You May Have Seen, proud member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. There are so many great podcasts on the network, and they're adding new ones all the time, showcasing great stories by great people and shining a spotlight on the Queen City. You can find them all at queencitypodcastnetwork.com. I've got some great episodes coming up with some of my favorite people in the world. Can't wait for you to hear. Here's a little snippet from some of the guests that you can check out in the weeks to come.
Oh, Brian, you would have seen me if you watched television.
Certainly.
You would have seen me in shows such as Graceland. I did the second season of Graceland. I was on it all season. I did the last season of Parenthood.
You may have seen me back when I was considered myself an actor as a murder rape accomplice in America's Most Wanted.
I mean, I guess I'll go for the really obvious ones. You may have seen me in The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel for about 2 seconds. Not even my parents recognized me.
Now, if you can name any of those folks just off of those little snippets, drop me a message on social media or email at youmayhaveseen@gmail.com, and I'll tell everyone how smart you are. I mean, who knows? You might even win a prize, like, I don't know, a picture of my parents from Christmas 2013. Okay, here's more with Jason Laughlin.
Because that's half of New York.
Yeah.
You just have to pay for it.
Yep.
And it's hard as fuck to pay for New York.
Yes, it is.
And like, I was living in a $600 a month place.
Wow.
Out in Bushwick. Before it became East Williamsburg, which it's actually not. It's still Bushwick, people. It's fucking Bushwick. I said yes, and then that turned into a year. And then that turned into a year and a half. And about 14 months into it, I mean, you know, I'm making good money. I'm meeting lots of cool people. I'm not doing what I want to do.
Right. But you're surviving.
But and I'm learning a skill that is not something you would... Like, I put up two 500-pound lifts to lift a 900-pound bridge.
Holy crap.
19 feet off the ground.
Yeah.
And, like, I had never done that before.
Right.
Nobody in that room had done that before. People had done similar stuff, but I certainly didn't. I commandeered... the actual installation of it.
Yeah.
So that shit's cool.
Yes, it is.
But I woke up one morning and I had a girlfriend at the time who I was living with, because in New York it's just easier to live with the fucking person that you see because otherwise you're paying for two spots and you know, it's just weird. It's not advisable. Trust me. I've done it twice. Still single.
Yeah.
or I guess still unmarried. I looked at her and I was like, I'm unhappy. This is the conversation I had with myself. I said, I'm unhappy. Why am I unhappy? Oh, it's because I'm not doing what I came here to do and what I want to do. My brain is telling me you're angry and you're going to get worse if you don't stop this.
Right.
So I gave him 2 months.
Okay.
And then I said, after that, I'm gonna pursue acting.
Yep.
And I'll just do freelance carpentry and whatever, blah, blah, blah. Ended up booking a lesser known Shakespeare in the Park showcase.
Okay.
With a wonderful company called Boomerang. And our director was Sarah... oh Jesus, motherfucking Christ! What is her last name?
I really
she's gonna get pissed at me when she hears this. She hears this.
When we talked last week, and you were like, "Can I curse on the podcast?" You've done an upstanding fucking job of cursing so far. It's been really wonderful. This I really want to commend you. You brought it. You brought the cursing.
You remember the dad's memorial, and I was like, "Kids, you have to cover your ears."
Oh, I didn't get to stay for the whole thing because I had a rehearsal that night myself. Okay. So yes.
I at one point was like, I can't hold it anymore. Kids, cover your ears.
Yes.
They all went,
boop. Yes.
And I was like, that fucker. And I just went off about
it. I missed that.
In a good way. It wasn't bad.
Right. In a loving way.
Yeah.
So this woman who was directing
Sarah Thigpen.
Boom.
She's from North Carolina and is now married to the guy who runs it, a man named Tim. Awesome.
Okay.
Awesome, Tim.
Yep. Fuck,
I hate names.
Tim is awesome.
He's going to give me shit. I probably should just send them the link so they can properly give me shit. And then right after that, I booked The Shunning, which was on the Hallmark Channel.
Right.
It's such a...
Hey, it is what it is. That's.
I actually, the first time I watched it, I had two friends, my friend and another friend. There was a particular thing that started to happen for one particular actor. And I was like, whenever this happens, we have to drink. We got shit-faced.
In the first 20 minutes.
Because, no. I mean, well, it took 15 minutes to go, that happens every time they're on stage. Or they're on the screen.
Yeah.
Cool. Now we have to drink every time that it happens.
And it happened through the rest of the movie.
Oh, God.
Amazing.
There wasn't a scene that this person wasn't in.
So much fun.
That didn't happen. And it was multiple times. And I shit you. It's just, there's a face. Oh, they can't see, so I'll show you the face.
Yeah.
The face was...
Oh, no.
Oh, with the...
Wow.
Oh, yeah. It was just...
Wow.
Like, super specific. Like, at some point, somebody told this person, it's okay to do this. And they just have been ever since.
It looked like they were... If that's the face...
Lovely
point,
person.
They, sure.
Lovely person.
But perhaps something wrong in the... in the
cranium?
Bowels?
Yeah.
In the down hair?
Yeah.
So, when did Warhorse come along?
So... After I booked that movie and did it, came back to New York, I was like, I've got to change up my... I've got to get representation. I ended up taking this fucking woman. So I ended up... at that time, a very good friend of mine was also an actor. We met doing technician stuff, stage stuff together. A guy named Jeff Wisneski. He is still one of my dearest friends. I was introduced to this woman who was like a... Kind of like a self-help.
Okay.
But...
Right.
Masked in... I'm going to do this class where you meet all of these exciting industry people and agents and things.
Right.
And then I also manage people. So when we're done with this, we can maybe have a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And the class was great. I should have stopped at the fucking class. I met a bunch of people. I mean, it's all a shit show. Like, you're paying for access.
Yes.
You're paying for access.
Right.
Brass tacks. That's what it is. But it does puts you in a position to be able to do something.
And in those markets like that, sometimes it's the only option you got.
And it's like $800 for the weekend or something. Yeah. And, you know, it's a big to-do and it puts you under pressure. So they see that and blah, blah, blah. At the end, there's a panel. You do a monologue or a scene and then they adjudicate it and then maybe you get an agent.
Yeah.
The best thing that happened from that is I met a casting director the first night because I did my monologue and he was like, here's my number. You need representation. So... stay in touch.
Mm-hmm.
And then I took class, got a couple of bites, but I had sort of put my eggs in this woman's basket because I was like, you're a fucking shysty little fucker.
But it's how they make money.
You know these people.
Right.
I don't know these people. So right. I put enough trust in her for her to fuck me. Because I had interest from agents from that thing. She was like, you don't want to go with them. They concentrate mostly this way. I was like, but I want something. She was like, we'll get there. I have stuff set up. And I was like, okay, cool. That lasted about 4 months before I went, you're a fucking bitch.
Wow.
You told me one thing. I have it in writing.
Wow.
And then did something else with my money. I know it's only $30. Yeah.
Who cares?
Fuck off.
Who cares?
I can't trust you.
No.
We're done.
Yep.
We are done. And then she sent me an email and said, we're done. I was like, yeah, goddamn you right we are. Yeah.
No.
You don't.
I broke up with you.
Exactly. I was just like, ding dong, the fucking witch is dead.
Jesus.
But I had, because I had contacted that guy.
Yeah.
Which
is always a big question mark when they say, keep in touch. That's,
yeah.
You but hear he, that. Like, yes.
You get a read from people, though.
Right.
And he meant it.
Good.
Like, he was unsolicited. I didn't say, hey, I'd love to. He offered it.
Yep.
A lovely casting director. Fuck me. Scott is his first name. I just can't remember his last name.
Okay.
And his partner
is
an agent, a guy named Michael Rodriguez. It's going to come to me. It starts with a W. Wojcik. Scott Wojcik.
Okay.
Wojcik.
Yeah. Yes. I recognize that name.
They're great.
Right.
So I contacted him. He's like, yes, actually, my partner is a... they're now married. Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I missed the wedding. Introduced me to Michael, and I was like, I love your energy. I love what you're saying.
Yep.
Within 6 months of working with him, I booked Warhorse. He got me in the room.
National.
I mean, I had to take a class with the casting director Camille Hickman, who is lovely as well. And I saw her recently in New York, and she like was on her bike, saw me, yelled my name, and stopped, and we chatted for 10 minutes. Like she's just she's a darling human being.
Right.
And as is Camille, Daniel Sui is his name. As is Daniel, a guy who I was doing carpentry with, who was in Warhorse at Lincoln Center.
Mm-hmm.
I saw him. He's like, "What are you up to?" And I was like, "Well, I'm doing this." And then I actually I'm taking a class with Camille tomorrow. And he was like, "Cool. I'll mention you to her." That's all it takes. Right place, right time. Because she said, "Oh, he wasn't wrong. You are good."
Wow, that's huge.
In the room, that's with, huge. In front of everybody
that's
else.
That's huge. That's
and then
huge.
The next day, I get an audition for the tour.
Wow.
And I go in for the tour.
Yep.
For the director. Or no, I go in for Daniel.
Okay.
Because he has to see me.
Yep.
And then I go in for the director. And I feel like I had the fucking worst audition of my life. He was just constantly... It was a British director, Bijan Shabani. Just like saying, needling with stuff and like, do this and do this and you got to get this and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, fuck, when did I... Am I in school right now? What the fuck is going on? Didn't hear anything for 3 weeks.
Wow.
I was like, well, that's done. And then I'm sitting there having a drink with a buddy of mine. I got a call, and my agent goes, "So, I had an audition that day." He's like, "How'd the audition go?" And I was like, "Good, just good, it's fine."
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel good about it. He's like, "Great. I have some bad news. I don't think that we can. Well, actually, you booked Warhorse." I was like, "You motherfucker!" I was like, "Wait, what?
How is that possible?
You right booked Warhorse?" And I went, "Shut the fuck up."
Wow.
And I was like, "How? It's been what the awesome. Cool." And then I was elated, and then I had celebratory drinks.
Oh my gosh.
I texted my girlfriend at the time about it, and she goes, "Of course you did. All of my friends are doing that show." And I was like, "We're going to have problems."
Yeah,
we're going to have problems.
Nice. Thanks for the backhand.
Thanks for that. Yeah.
Thanks for the backhand. Oh, everybody's doing that show. Good
that
for
was,
you.
That
That's
was
great.
A hard time for our it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But yeah, so booked that. Did that for 15 months. I mean, 2 months rehearsal and then like a month of tech and then on the road for a year.
Yeah.
And it was an awesome, awesome time. I've got three or four lifelong friends and a bunch of people who I want to know that they're doing well in life. You know, it's just a lot of lovely people.
I can't see how you couldn't.
I lucked out. I've been fucking lucky.
Right.
Because, well, at least the three big things I've done, all British directors, and I jam with them much more than a lot of American directors. Not all, I don't know.
Right.
I haven't worked with everybody.
Okay.
But in my experience, I find that British directors just are concentrated about the whole picture of what's happening on stage right now. What's this? What's the important thing of this story moving forward?
Right.
What are we taking away? Where do we look? What is it? Everybody, there were 35 of us on stage. Mm-hmm. Every single person knew where the story was because we all went through every single scene beat by beat to figure out what the fuck was going on. And it was tedious to a lot of people. But I was like, I don't care.
Amazing.
This means that we're all going to know what the fuck we're doing at any given moment.
That's a gift. That's a huge
gift.
Huge. That's amazing.
It's huge. But it's what it should be.
So the three big things. Warhorse.
I did Mosh and All with Rebecca Hall at Roundabout Theater. And I did The Audience with Helen Mirren.
You did The Audience on Broadway with Helen Mirren. Yeah. That was your Broadway debut.
No.
Oh, Mosh and All was.
Yeah.
That was the
Broadway debut.
All right. So now let's bring things back a little bit. This kid from Charlotte working at Children's Theater.
Oh, yeah.
Pissing off Busy Phillips about Diet Coke, whose father doesn't like him as an actor until...
21.
Until 21.
Legal age of drinking.
Ends up on Broadway. I mean, did you have to stop and go, I'm sorry, where am I right now? What is going on? What the hell happened? And how did that... Because obviously your dad got to see you on Broadway.
Yes, he did. Yes. Both shows. And he came and saw the tour show twice,
and
which
did
was
he,
awesome.
Was he... I mean,
oh, elated.
There you go.
He was elated. You know, he was my biggest... champion.
Of course he was.
Because he wanted me to succeed, and he knew how hard it was, and he constantly worried. He had a lot of anxiety, and I'm sure I caused some of it. Because it's just a shitty city, and like he doesn't like New York. He didn't like being there when he was there, but he, of course, would come and fly, which he doesn't like to do also, because I was doing stuff.
Yep.
Like, they flew up to fucking Maine to see me in a show.
Maine's a great place. I don't blame him.
Maine is awesome.
Yes.
But yeah, it was very weird. to start.
I mean, talk to me about that time of just going out on that stage for the first time, and just, or even just taking the subway into Times Square, getting out and going like, I'm going to my first Broadway performance, Jason Laughlin from Charlotte.
Well, just
Charlotte.
Like the rehearsal was in a spot that I had built sets.
Oh, sure.
42nd Street Studios, where there's a small theater in there that like I built a show that Maggie Siff was in, a Shakespeare play, which I'm a big fan of Maggie Siff, by the way. Maggie, if you're listening, call me. So when I got off the subway and walked up to the door, I was like, I'm going in to rehearse a play on Broadway. I'm not. Okay. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, it is.
Very weird.
I got to assume that it's like, just, is it as romantic as I imagine that it would be? You know, what we as actors, as career actors, know and expect the feeling of Broadway to be. I know what it feels like, just even to go to a show, just when it's there, when it's becoming showtime.
Yeah.
It's
It gets into the same, like it's, I don't want to say it's routine, but.
Well, at the end of the day, it's a job.
You walk into the room. Well, yeah, but.
It's a really good job.
It's not that for me. Like, I don't think of it as a job. Like, jobs are things that I have to do to make money. I happen to make money for doing something I love to do.
Yes.
So I don't consider it like, oh, I have to go up and go to work.
No, right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's only nomenclature. Yes, technically it's a job.
Yes.
But, you know, again, I've been lucky. Our directors will have just, like, as soon as we get in the room, hey, everybody, it's so awesome that everybody is here. This team is awesome. Let's get to work.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go.
Yeah.
I've only got this much time. Because the tour, we had 2 months because the National was producing it.
Yeah.
When it's American producers, you have 2.5 weeks. You have 14, 19 days, something like that. And for a play like Machinal, which is just entirely embedded with all sorts of different, like, weird tropes that she was writing into a society that didn't understand that women were their own beings, you know, and themes. And it's a wonderfully dense play.
Sure.
And we dissected it fully. Our director was fucking amazing.
Yep.
And it's weird because I had such a small part. Like, I'm filling in holes.
So you were part of the understudy ensemble? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I had one line.
Okay.
Yeah,
great.
One line. 5 or 6 different roles. Mm-hmm. But also, like, any voice in the room mattered. So we were discussing stuff, and I would be able to, I'm really good at problem solving, especially when it's spatial relations. Mm-hmm. And we had a set that rotated. So it was 4 different quadrants that all were interchangeable. Like, you could change them into different spots. And so between every scene, because it was 12 scenes or 18 scenes or whatever it is, the ship would just, like, backstage, they'd be changing the stuff behind while the scene on the front happens. Until the last, which is the walk to her death, to the electric chair. And as the thing is moving slowly, they're walking, we're changing the set or moving around back there. Opening night, the fucking motor breaks.
Oh, no.
So all of the dudes who come to see the show, who built the fucking thing and worked in the theater, had to get up and push the motherfucker. Opening night was done by hand.
Awesome.
I shit you not. We waited for 1.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, the owner of the theater, I'm not going to remember his name.
It's okay.
Said, open bar.
Love it.
Because they're like, it's going to be 1 hour before we can even get it to a point where it can move.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So but it was amazing. But we're doing a job.
Yes.
And that's what you get in rooms like that.
Yeah.
And so there's not time to revel in where you are. It's just
of
about
course.
Moving forward together.
No, I absolutely get that. But I mean, I just didn't, you know, I was wondering if there was just a moment where
don't get me
just
wrong.
In the
when Helen Mirren
room,
walked into the room the first day, I was like, I don't know what to say.
Yep.
That doesn't happen often. I don't know what to say.
Excellent transition.
I avoided talking to her for a good, like, 30 minutes.
Talk to me about working with Helen Mirren in the audience on Broadway.
She is, she's okay.
No,
she is a wonderful human being. You would never know. If you didn't know who she was, you wouldn't know that she was an international superstar. She doesn't let it on. I mean, there are little things that you pick up, but it's not anything that you would see outwardly.
Is she Dame Helen Mirren?
She is.
Has she been Damed?
She's Dame.
She's a Dame.
She is.
I thought so.
Royalty.
Yeah.
Even if she didn't have that title, she's fucking royalty.
Yeah.
She cusses like a sailor. She drinks.
Perfect.
Not like a fish. I will say it's not like a fish, but she does drink, which I like.
She drinks like a pro.
She drinks like a pro. She's definitely a pro.
Yeah.
But she's been a pro from
a long time.
Early on. Like, some of the shit
did she
back in her youth to just say fuck off to the men trying to put her in a pigeonhole.
I'm sure.
There's a great interview. I can't remember the guy's name, but she just goes, is that the only thing that I'm worth to you? how I look? Is that why I'm here? And like, and it's just awkward for the dude. I'm like, yes, Helen Mirren. Yes.
No, but there's. I want to know her secret.
I don't know. I don't know what her secret is. I didn't ask her secret. But she's overly generous right. on stage and off, and like her presence brightens a room. And it's not because she's a star; it's because of who she is. She didn't get famous because she's attractive and talented. No. She got famous because she makes the world better when she walks into a room. And she's also extremely attractive and
yes,
wonderful actor.
Yes.
We would have Saturday night drinks up on the fifth floor because all of the ensemble guys were upstairs. One of our guys just loved craft cocktails. So he would bring a bunch of bottles. Like we had basically a bar on the fifth floor. She would come up almost every time. And like people from other Broadway, like Matthew Broderick came up.
Nice.
I think F. Murray Abraham. I can't remember. But like Michael Sheen was there one time.
Awesome.
I mean, just like all these people want to come and say, hey, to Helen, because it's fucking Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
She's a dame and she's amazing.
Yes.
But it was just lovely. Like she would joke with us on stage. Like I basically was a glorified set mover. I was one of the
I saw a little tiny clip online and I got to see you like shuffle across the stage. Yeah. Yes.
She's very playful. At one point, like so we had to carry this desk. We couldn't look down. We couldn't see. So we had to do it by steps and by association.
Wow.
And we had to hit within like a 5-inch
holy Jesus
range. And we got Grayson was this guy's name, and we got pretty good at it. But at one point, like she comes over, sets the bag down on the rolling desk, and the desk lowers into place by us. But at one point, she walks over. This is like I don't know, a week or two into the run, and she sets the thing down and immediately goes, I expect to see one of you gentlemen in my room later. And we both just go. And I think I said, Mum. Because we have to, you know, do the bow.
Right. Yes, because she plays Queen Elizabeth.
Yeah. And then the next night, the next show, she goes, I didn't see either of you. And I went, we were told you were busy, Mum. And she does, she goes, and like gives me the nod and the smile. Oh, and I was
love
like,
it.
I'm in. I got her.
I love it.
I made
it.
Helen Mirren laugh. My life is complete.
That is fantastic.
But she is so lovely and just down to earth. And, you know, the Clintons came.
Holy crap.
I have a picture that we were told specifically not to put online because it was during the run up to the election.
Wow.
But I still have that picture. It's fucking, it's Bill, Hillary. Oh my God, I went over my time.
That's okay. You're fine.
We're both young like this now.
How long did you do that show for? How long did it run for?
4 months.
Okay, because it was limited because of her?
Yeah, we also only did 7 shows instead of 8 because Helen Mirren didn't want to do fucking 8 shows. And when Helen Mirren says, I don't want to do 8 shows, Stephen Daldry and Peter Morgan went, cool.
Yeah, that's who directed it.
Stephen Daldry.
Yeah, that's not bad.
No.
No.
He's the shit. That audition process was...
Yeah, tell me about that real quick.
Awesome. So I went in and did the initial audition, which was somebody else. Jeffrey Beaver is the guy's name who ended up doing, he did the original production, and then because half of the cast was from London, the London cast, and the others came from here. And I did it, and I was like, Jason, grabbed a chair and brought it up to him. I was like, come sit down, let's talk about it. You loan these people that you have to explain what this is. So well, let's get a little bit more on that, and blah, blah, blah. And then try it again. Stephen Daldry's a fucking riot. So I got up and did it again. He's like, yeah, that's better. I'm not doing his voice justice.
I don't care.
But
you're attention.
I get called back, and there's 6 of us that are called back, and we're all just going in and out. Together in pairs.
Right.
So we do the same sort of monologue, but as if there's somebody else. And so it's improv, basically, with this text.
And so much
like, that's up my fucking alley.
Right.
Like, give me a thing, give me a task and a thing, and I'm good. So I kept being the one that was scolding the other person. And at one point, like, everybody goes, I was like, Jason, stay back. Just so you know, we fucking love you.
Oh, yes.
You're in. We just want to know who else to pair you with. And I went, okay. Is this happening right now? I guess it's happening right now. Okay, cool. So then I was like, great. And they were like, what are they talking about? I'm like, just tell me something to do, something. And then I go back out, do it again, come back in. And at one point they're like, you always are the one that does the upper intelligence. Be the guy from McDonald's who's just like got into this footman job and has no idea what to do. And I was like, all right. Everyone in the room died.
Nice.
And then I kept it up for a little bit. And then they were like, okay, stop. We gotta all right, try, let's do it again. And I did it again, and they all laughed. And then we started the fucking...
That's hysterical. Yeah. So you guys can't see Jason right now, but he just had an expression on his face that looked like he pooped himself a little bit and was enjoying it.
Yeah.
So I can understand why people would laugh at that. You're way cooler than I am. I don't think I could have stood in the room with Stephen Daldry and have him say, we love you, you're in. I would have peed, cried, hugged him, peed on him, all those things.
I mean, I
don't know
I
how
might
the hell.
Have peed on him. But that's a whole different story.
that's for the next episode.
Right.
Look, Jason, again, it's so great to reconnect with you after all this time. This has been fantastic. Thanks for coming on and doing this and
Thanks
talking
for
with
having
me. I know you got stuff going on. I know you're excited about some things coming up. I know there's certainly going to be more for you coming up. And, I wish you all of the luck with it.
Likewise.
So, yeah, this has been You May Have Seen with Jason Laughlin. Thanks so much for listening.
Have fun, people.
Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And if you'd like to leave a comment or review, that's always nice. You can also email us at youmayhaveseen@gmail.com if you have a comment or a question, and we'll give you a shout-out in the next episode.